Have you ever wanted to achieve hyperscale just like Facebook? Let's mash on that.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the ASP.NET Monsters. In today's episode, Dave steals an idea from some minor little startup website called Facebooks?
Facebook?
Yeah. The Facebook, I think.
I don't know.
It's not gonna stick.
I spend most of my time on Orkut.
Okay.
More Simon jokes.
It's a legitimate website, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. More history of social media later.
Definitely. Okay. So today's episode, we're talking about. Well, I was kind of spurred on by this blog post that Facebook posted this week about they worked with browser vendors to kind of tweak some things to save what they claim is about 60% of the requests that are going to the Facebook servers. And we'll link to the blog post down below here, and it's definitely worth a read. But the gist of it essentially is that rather than having linking to specific resources by file name, what they do is they're generating hashes based on the contents of those files, so that the file name is unique based on that hash value, which means they can save. Initially, what they were doing this is to save some compute time, in that any time that a request came back into the servers checking to see if a file had modified since a period of time, they never actually had to go and even check the file, because it never did change, because they're going by the file content hash. If the hash is the same, then the file contents haven't changed. So it was all about initially saving a little bit of compute time and not having to go and check file contents to see if it actually has changed since the date that was passed in the if modified since header. And if you scroll down a little further here, they found some weird things in Chrome where it was just sending way more of these revalidation requests, where it's asking, hey, has this file changed? Hey, has this file changed? Way more than the other browsers. So they worked with Chrome to kind of get that down to a better number. Got it down to, well, something more reasonable anyway. And then they worked with Firefox to add this new cache control header called the immutable, so that if you set the cache control header and you include immutable in there, then the browser is just never going to ask again. If it has it cached, it's always just going to use that file because it knows it's never going to change.
So what's the advantage to that over just setting your max age to like a million years?
There are lots of cases where it still does check even within the time frame. So the user hitting reload was one of them. Chrome used to do it on any time you posted data. So if you posted a form on the get, okay, coming back, it would go and revalidate all those things, even though the max age was within that time frame.
Okay. So. Must be weird being like a big enough company that you can just call up Firefox and be like, hey, we think you should change the way that your entire browser works.
Can you help us fix the internet?
Exactly. So Facebook went through that whole process, and now it's something that, in theory, we can start taking advantage of in our applications. And Simon and I were talking about how could we implement this in ASP.NET Core. And we kind of thought about a couple different approaches. And today we're going to go through an approach that's probably not the most ideal approach. And I'll preface this whole thing by saying this is really just kind of a proof of concept of the idea. It's not production ready code, and there's lots of ways that we could easily break this, but it at least shows the idea. And what we've done is kind of combined a few different things. There's a tag helper here and some middleware that helps us accomplish this. So the first part is that tag helper that generates those hashes and kind of replaces the file name with a unique hash based on the contents of the file. So if we look at that here, I've called it the hashed script tag helper, which inherits from URL resolution tag helper that's built into MVC. And it's the one that resolves, if we look at our, it's the one that resolves these squiggly lines basically to www root. So we inherit from that, so we get that behavior for free. And most of the code here I've just borrowed from the script tag helper that's built into MVC. So theirs is just called the script tag helper. And it kind of does this, but it does it in a different way. It appends a version parameter. So it does ?v=, and then puts the hash there at the end of the file name. And I wanted to do this more like Facebook was doing it, where they're actually replacing the file name with that unique hash instead. So what I'm doing is, if you apply ASP hash URL, if you set that attribute to true on a script tag, this tag helper will kick in, and then it goes and processes it. I just borrowed this code essentially from the script tag helper, where it's first we have to process that URL attribute to resolve that squiggly line. And then what we're doing, if that property is set to true, we are using what I've probably not very good name for this, but I've called it the immutable resource provider. I'm passing it the source, so that's the path to the file that was the source attribute on this script. I'm saying give me a hash path, so a hashed version of that path, and then overriding the source attribute. So that's all I'm doing there.
So when you say a hashed version of a path, are you hashing the file, or are you hashing just the
file,
the URI? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So yeah, I really didn't name these things very well, but again, I borrowed this implementation largely from what was in the file version provider that the script tag helper uses. But essentially, I'm getting that file, checking if it exists locally on disk here in my www root folder, and if it does, then that's where I'm getting the hash for that file. If we scroll down, this is what they were doing. So they're doing they're computing a hash using SHA-256 and then encoding that as a base64 URL encoded. So then I'm storing this in a memory cache so that I can get it later, which you'll see. So that, well, first of all, so that we're not recomputing it every single time, because that would kind of defeat the purpose of trying to save on some compute resources here. So it should only ever do it the first time that somebody tries to, or that it processes that tag helper with that particular file path. Any other time, it will just grab it from the memory cache and use that value. So it won't try to recompute it every time.
Right on. So do you handle the case as well? I mean, I know it's just proof of concept, but you are generating and storing the hash on the initial request. If the cache is invalidated between the time that the person made the first request and the next request, do you also regenerate that hash for any of those files at that time, or is that one of the ways that it breaks?
Well, it doesn't break. It would recompute it more often than it needed to. So
gotcha.
I'm not specifying an amount of time that it's valid for. So the invalidation would have to be if it was under memory pressure, which it's right. Really just two strings that it's storing in there. So I can't see that happening very often. The case we would need to handle is more if the file contents actually changed while the server's running. We should be watching that file and then triggering a revalidation at that time to wipe out that existing cache and create a new one. So in here then, for my script tag, I've just added ASP hash URL equal to true. So we're just referencing the files just as we normally would. And then in my view imports here, I'm adding the tag helpers from this assembly so that kicks in. And in the startup, I'll remove that for now. I added the immutable resource provider just as a singleton. So that's injected into the tag helper as part of the dependency injection. So now, so when I run this, everything looks okay, but you'll notice that this carousel isn't working here. And if we open up our developer tools, we'll actually see that Well, there's my script tags that rendered, and you'll see they rendered as resource slash and then that hash dot JS. So just something that doesn't make sense looking at it as a human, but we can figure that out in the back end. But that's not a file that exists on the server, so it's not able to actually serve that properly. It has no way of knowing how to serve that. So that's where the other part of this comes in, is the middleware. And what I did is created...
the piece you commented out there.
Yeah, this piece here that I commented out. So if we enable this middleware, and it has to go before static files, and what we're doing here is we inject that immutable resource provider into the middleware here. And when this middleware is invoked, it grabs the value, the request path, so the request that's coming in, and it checks to see if that, essentially, if that exists in our immutable resource provider, so if it's something that we know about. And if it is, if it's found, then it returns the actual resource path, which is the file where the contents are actually stored, and we just change the request path and then carry on to, so just change the path to the actual file and then pass it on to the next piece in the middleware, which would be the static files, static file middleware. So to build this, I just looked at the URL rewrite middleware and how they implemented that to see how they were handling that, so similar concept. So we're just mapping back from the hash to the actual file. If it's not found, then we're just carrying on to the next one as though nothing happened. So now when we run this, because we have this in place...
The next one being the next piece of the middleware in the pipeline.
Yeah, which is static files. So now when we run this, everything should actually come through the way we expect it to. Our files are there. We have no errors. They were all served properly the way we would have expected them to. There's the actual contents. And it's all good.
When we inspect the can we see the response for those resources as well? In the like, what does the browser say those guys are?
Okay, so let's just...
Well, I guess you're going to try and show that through curl.
I am, yeah. So if we look here and we just get the main page, here's those script tags at the bottom. And that bottom one was site.js. If we look at what that actually was, there isn't actually anything there. It's just a comment that says write your JavaScript code. But if we go over to curl here and we do a request for that file, there's the contents. And we can see that it's returning 200 OK. So even though we haven't really done that part where it's always returning 304, regardless of I guess we haven't done the request. So if I add the header here that says if modified since, so if we do just since, you know, now, we're getting that 304 not modified. But if we go back a bit, it's telling me that it has modified since then, and it is actually returning the contents. So we're not fully optimized yet. It's still passing it onto the static file middleware to handle the if modified since part of it, which has some compute overhead because it has to parse all those headers and actually look at the date and compare it to, so it has to parse it as a date instead of a string. And so we can optimize this a little bit further by pulling in some extra code into our middleware here, which I sneakily have hidden down below.
How convenient.
Very. It's so easy to write code when it's just there and commented out of sight.
Yeah, most people don't know that if you scroll past like line 100, that's where all of the good stuff is. Yeah.
All the code you intended to write.
Mm-hmm.
So here all we have to do is check to see if that if modified since header exists, and if it does, then we're just going to return status code 304 and be done with it and not pass. So because we're returning right away, we're not passing on to the next piece of middleware in the pipeline. So we're kind of shortcutting the pipeline that way. Now when I run this, so I should get, I got the 304 there. That's my result. And it doesn't matter how far back I go or what date I use here, I'm always going to get the 304. So now we've saved a bit of compute time there, and we can achieve that hyperscale that we wanted to achieve. Last piece was adding this response header, so that we have that immutable, and we would need to make this a little more robust, obviously, than just having this all hard-coded in here. But again, if we run this now and execute that request, now we get our cache control max age 3600 comma immutable, which tells the browser never to ask for it again. Once you have the contents, it's not going to change. So this is pretty, as I said, there's quite a few ways that this would break, and I don't think it's really the best way to approach this. What Simon and I were discussing is that it would be better if at build time we computed all these hashes and maybe just had that in, so we generated at that point a little database file of some sort, like a JSON file or whatever, that had the mappings of the hashes to the actual file names. And then we had our tag helper and our middleware run based off of that file, that database that was generated at build time, instead of trying to do this all at runtime and manage it in a memory cache. There's definitely more efficient ways of doing this.
Part of your bundling and minification process or something, then compute the hashes and create the JSON list or something.
Yep. And my approach to resolving these paths in my resource provider here have been like that. It's very, there are ways easily that you could break this even just by adding a query parameter to the path. It would break the whole approach, but it shows the concept anyway, and I'm curious to see what people think of it. Is it a optimization that would be worthwhile to have for most applications? Hard to say. Most of us aren't really working at that scale, but sometimes we are, and getting that little bit of extra horsepower is...
I think regardless of the size that you're at, when you are talking about especially in the world of where we're renting servers, it doesn't matter how big of a server it is, if you can reduce 60% of the static traffic, and you've got a cloud-based server, that could save you from having to scale up to a new, a bigger instance size. That 60% is a lot. If it's static resources, it's less so, I guess. It's not as much processing, but if you're paying for egress, then those are all valid concerns.
Yeah, keep in mind that it's not 60% of the traffic, 60% of the requests. And I don't know what thing, but 90% of the time, they're just going to return that 304.
Yeah.
But that's still an extra hit. And if unless you're using HTTP 2, that's still set up and tear down of a connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel like this would be kind of less useful with HTTP 2, just because you don't have to pay that overhead. But it's still...
Yeah, there's less overhead.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's still some overhead there. And then I don't know if you're pushing this out to a CD, pushing those resources out to a CDN, then I don't know, is it, maybe that's a better way to handle this and not worry about it at the ASP.NET core level.
Well, there's no reason this approach wouldn't work at a CDN level too. Like if you had a CDN that supported this same sort of schema, and if you have a CDN that allows you to set headers on resources, and there's no reason that you couldn't do this as part of your build process.
Yeah, that's true. But again, it would be more of a build time thing.
Yeah.
So hopefully within the next little while here, we'll try to spec out that build time approach and we'll do an episode on what that would look like.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us on another episode of the ASP.NET Monsters. As always, if you have comments, questions, or anything else, feel free to leave us a message right down below there, and we will read every comment. If we read yours on the air or we answer your question on air, then we will send you a handy-dandy ASP.NET Monster sticker, which I always hold up a laptop to show. Ooh. There we go. I have so many of those stickers in like my bedside table, I should freeze some and keep them by my computer. Just this purpose.
Seems like a better place for them.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll see everybody on the next episode.
Cheers.